And episode number 23 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast is brought to you by my BlackBerry, which I had to use to record this week's guest.
Welcome to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Here's radio host and lifelong Yankees fan, Ralphie Aversa.
Yeah, there I was last night, and I just bought, a couple weeks ago, a brand new Zoom recorder. Beautiful piece of equipment. It's the industry standard for in-the-field audio recording, radio, podcasting, even movies. People use it and sync up the audio with film, so on and so forth. The Zoom recorders. I bought the H5, brand new, and then I also bought a brand new SD card, 64 gigabyte. Last night, I'm getting ready to tape our interview for this week on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast, and the SD card won't work. And so thankfully, my handy BlackBerry, I've been a BlackBerry user for about 14, 15 years now, to the chagrin of many people. I get a lot of grief for it, a lot of grief. But I'll tell you, the BlackBerry, great camera, excellent, excellent audio. You have my Giancarlo Stanton interview. Was recorded on a BlackBerry early. So use the BlackBerry. That came through in the clutch, and away we go as we get ready here for episode number 23. I believe we are on episode number 5 inside season 2 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast at Pinstripe Lanes on all of your favorite social networks. Of course, thank you for rating, reviewing, and subscribing. We appreciate that. If you haven't done so, please get to that. I'm at Ralphie Aversa on all social networks. Ralphie Aversa, hello. How are you? Been a busy week for me. A lot of things going on, but right now we are talking Yankees as the Yankees up in the Bronx tonight on this Thursday night, getting ready to wrap up their homestand and a four-game series against the Mariners before they go down to Tampa. They'll bring some of the injured with them to rehab. Some will, or at least one will stay back. Aaron Hicks is driving to Moosic, Pennsylvania this weekend to play with the Rail Riders, so maybe on this Mother's Day weekend, if you're trying to get take a little road trip, PNC Field over there in between Scranton and Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Great ballpark, great in-game experience, and you'll get to see Aaron Hicks on a rehab assignment this weekend. But the Yanks will be down in Tampa with their rehab facilities playing against the first place Tampa Bay Rays of the AL East. So that's what's going on there. As far as this past homestand, though, I did get to two games. Last Saturday, I sat in the Audi Club for my first time. Face value on the tickets, $150. Overall, it's not my first choice for a seat inside New Yankee Stadium. However, if any of these things are true, A, the weather's bad. B, you got family in town. C, you're bringing someone to the game who maybe isn't really into the Yankees and or baseball, period. And most importantly, D, you're showing up to the ballpark very, very hungry. Audi Club's a good ticket for $150. The view, actually, from those seats is pretty good. I mean, yeah, it's like a suite level, terrace level, outfield seat, essentially. But, of course, you're indoors, climate controlled, and you have this amazing cuisine. It's all-you-can-eat food, soft drinks, non-alcoholic beverages included as well. You have a waiter or waitress that will get you both the non-alcoholic and alcoholic beverages. You square up with them after on the alcoholic side. There is a little outdoor area as well, that Budweiser home run deck or whatever they call it. It's connected to the Audi Club. You can go out there. You can also walk throughout the stadium because it's all open. If you're trying to get outdoors, if you're jonesing to get outdoors, if it is a nice day, in fact, it really wasn't last Saturday. So particularly my aunt was thrilled that I had these seats that were completely indoors. I would say my one big criticism of the Audi Club experience is pregame. Because instead of having in there, on the TVs, whatever's happening on the scoreboard and then piping in the audio from the stadium into the Audi Club, instead of doing that, they, I guess, just have Yes Network on or whatever, but then the audio is some playlist. So you're sitting there, you know, you're waiting for your beer or mimosa or Bloody Mary, and you're on your second round of sushi, and all of a sudden you're watching as the players are warming up, listening to Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga's Shallow. Doesn't really add up. Not a lot of juice there, as one of our past guests would say. Not a lot of juice there. So that was my one big criticism of the experience. That, I mean, look, you're indoors, right? Most of the time, you're not going to Yankee Stadium to sit indoors and watch a game. Otherwise, you'd stay home or you'd go to a bar, whatever the case may be. Maybe you'd go to the bar that our guest owns. A little foreshadowing there. I will say, though, the food in Audi Club, fantastic. It was a 1 o'clock Saturday start, so they had a breakfast station with your French toast and your scrambled eggs and your omelet station and the whole nine. They had a carving station, a huge salad bar, the aforementioned sushi bar. Then they were doing some farro salad, shrimp, jambalaya thing. As far as the raw bar for seafood, they only had the jumbo cocktail shrimp, but they are jumbo. And then they do have your Cracker Jacks, your potato chips, your hot dogs. Amazing dessert selection also. A little ice cream bar going on up there too. Service was great. So no complaints on the food. Again, just show up hungry. Face value $150. You go on Groupon or Gold Star, you might be able to get it cheaper. They run the sales throughout the course of a month with select games. But even at $150, if you got a tricky situation and the weather's not good and you go on an empty stomach, I think it's worth your money. Then I went again on Tuesday night. Friend of the show, been a guest before, Mike Asurlis, who was able to score us a pair of tickets in the second row right field. So the wall's right there. So was Clint Frazier and his Jordan 11 Space Jam custom cleats. My buddy Zach Campbell, who Mike and I'm sure a number of other people that listen to this podcast do not like. He is my buddy. He's a friend of mine, Zach. And his season tickets are nearby. He was not there. I believe he was up in Toronto as he kind of makes his rounds throughout most of the MLB stadiums this year. So didn't get to see Zach, but Mike and I hung out for a little bit. We left during the rain delay. I had a big day at work the next day. You crucify me for it. That's just, you know, sometimes it stinks to be an adult. I did stay up, though, and watch from home as the Yankees came back and won thanks to Gio Urshela, a very happy fella, and DJ LeMahieu. All right, without further ado, let's get to this week's guest on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast, because he gave us a lot of time, gave us a great spot. He is the owner of my favorite bar in the city that I go to watch Yankee games. Really, I go there to watch all sports, but especially Yankee games, especially baseball. You'll find out why when we chat with Sean Clancy, the owner of Foley's here in Midtown. He is our guest this week on episode number 23 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Welcome back to the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. I'm Ralphie Aversa. Our guest this week joins us from his bar. That's where we're taping this, in the back corner. And I'm excited because it's my favorite sports bar in all of the city. This is the place you go if you can't make it up to the Bronx for a game, or the Yankees are out of town, or for that matter, there's maybe another game you want to see. Perfect location, 33rd between 5th and 6th, so it's very easy to get to. The memorabilia on display here rivals anything you've seen outside of Cooperstown. They always have the game on. The kitchen's open relatively late. Great beer selection. Just a fun place to come watch a game. They bill it as an Irish bar with a baseball attitude. It's named after the sports writer Red Foley. It's called Foley's. And here at Foley's, we're with Sean Clancy, who's from Ireland, but opened this place up in 2004. Recently celebrated its 15th year anniversary. And Sean is kind enough to join us now here on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Sean, thank you so much for the time and for having us into your bar, into Foley's.
It's my pleasure. Two of the favorite things I like to do, talk and talk about baseball.
I have come here quite a bit, and one of the things I've noticed is that whether it's beat writers who are based in the city, beat writers of visiting teams that are either in town to cover the Mets or the Yankees, it always seems like Foley's is a must stop for them. Obviously, again, as I mentioned, named after a sports writer. Why do you think you have such a great relationship with the baseball media?
Well, I would expand it slightly. It's not just the media, but there are three groups of people in baseball that are very special to me, and they are the media, the scouts, and the umpires. And the reason for that is that basically without those three groups of people, there is no baseball. They have hellacious schedules, they're away from their families for long periods of time. And basically what I wanted to do is I wanted to offer them a home away from home, somewhere where they can come where they're not at the hotel bar, they're not at B-Dubs or, you know, Applebee's, but somewhere where they can come where they're going to see somebody who's going to remember them. They're going to, the bartender's going to know who they are. And just for a couple of hours, they can rest and relax and basically have some Irish hospitality. As you said, you know, they I plan my entire schedule around their schedules, so it's always fun to be able to catch up. You know, they're like friends that you see every so often, and, you know, some of them I'm lucky enough to see three times a year. Others, I might only see them once a year. So one of the things we've done is, as you mentioned, we're named after Red Foley, and Red would have been 90 this year. So what we're doing is, every week, we're the home of a lot of different things here at Foley's, not just an Irish Bar with a Baseball Attitude or the home of the Irish American Baseball Hall of Fame, but we've also become home of the Stuffed Burger in New York. And so what we do is we have a different Stuffed Burger every week. And this year what we're doing is every week it's dedicated to a writer or somebody that works in the media. And what we try to do is tie it to the teams that are coming in. So, you know, we actually did one for Nick Cofaro, the Red Sox beat writer who passed away during spring training, and that raised over $1,000 for ALS. Last week we featured two. We had the Bobby Nightingale, which is Bob Nightingale from USA Today's son, Bobby, who covers the Cincinnati Reds. So this week it's Dan Hayes, who covers the Twins for the Athletic. But Dan came here first when he was working for a tiny little paper with San Diego. So, longer way of saying that's why we see the writers, because we like to give them someplace where they can come in and just rest and relax, and in a lot of cases get the balls busted by me. But again, it's somewhere where they feel it's just a little bit of home in New York.
That's one of the staples with this bar, too, that I love. You mentioned, obviously, the umpires, and I know they just had a big auction online that you donated to. The Stuffed Burgers usually are raising money for charity as well. You host a lot of charity events. We'll talk about that here in just a second as well. Why is that so important for you, Sean, to constantly give back to not just watch all of these various charities?
That's the most important thing for me, is to give back. I mean, truthfully, I mean, at its, if you bring it back to its basic level, I mean, I literally am the American dream. Probably not the face of the American dream, but I am the American dream. That's why I have the perfect face for podcasts. But, you know, I mean, I came here from Ireland. I was 21 years of age. I knew what I wanted to do. I mean, I could never do what I'd done here in Ireland. I couldn't start from scratch and open a bar. And truthfully, I don't even think if I tried to do it today, I couldn't. If I was in the same position I was in 15 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to do what I've been able to do here now. So I've been very, very lucky. So my goal is to help others. In the 15 years I've been here, I think that the thing I am proudest of, it's great, the memorabilia is great, and it's great when people come in and to see the people that come in. But to know that we can help make a difference. And just, you know, it's like a little bit here, a little bit there. We help, on average, about 25 different charities a year. And some of them is just, like you said, some of them is just as simple as we have a sandwich on our menu named after David Wright. David's a good friend of mine. And that literally started as a wind-up. He was busting my chops about something. So I put the sandwich on the menu. That sandwich has raised over $10,000 for charity. So it's just doing a little bit. I mean, if we all do a little bit and we all try to help people, and there are a lot of people out there that need to be helped, we're hoping very soon to be doing some charity events with, hopefully, fingers crossed, Miguel Andujar, and also Robbie Cano and Rosario.
Oh, nice.
The Mets, so.
Another former Yankee who's hosted events. You've had a couple former Yankees, first of all, as guest bartenders for charity events. Al Leiter, David Cohn, and then David Robertson, of course, getting behind the bar as well. High Sox for Hope. He's had an event here also. When people ask you, I guess, specifically about your relationship with the Yankees and its players, its alumni, what do you say? What do you normally gravitate to?
The relationship I have is mostly personal. You just get to know these guys. And to be honest with you, I mean, David Robertson was a great example, and it was kind of ironic how it happened. Somebody reached out to me and put me in touch with Erin, David's wife, just after the Tuscaloosa had been ravaged by tornadoes. And she asked me if I'd give her a $50 gift card. She wanted to put together a gift basket that she was hoping to raise to auction off and raffle some money. And I said no. I said, give me your husband for 2 hours and I will give you $10,000. And she thought, to be honest with you, I think she thought I was full of dish. But she said, are you serious? I said, just come for 2 hours and bring a stack of 8x10s. That's all I ask you. I said, I will handle everything else. And I dealt with the Yankees and dealt with security and dealt with, insurance and all the rest of it. And I have to say, I was a little scared when he went behind the bar, because all I need is a Yankee reliever to get cut on a glass and Foley's ass is grass. So we got him for 2 hours. And I wrote him a check for $15,000.
Wow.
And that's kind of how it started. And again, I was just talking to a former player today that's working on a charity, and he's like, I've got so many friends in baseball that want to help, and I'm like, well, unless I know for sure, I will never ask anybody. I don't care how rich they might be or how rich I think they might be. I will never ask anybody for money. But I have no problem with asking a former player or a player and say, hey, listen, all I want, give me 2 hours of your time. Let's do a little Q&A. Let's do some autographs. Let's put you behind the bar. I will give you, just give me 2 hours, and anyone can spare 2 hours. And with current players, again, the season is so long and it's hard on these guys. And people think, oh, it's glamorous. They're flying here and they're flying there. But, they're away from their families. And, they're constantly, there's the pressures that come with the game and what have you. I never like bothering them during the season. But when somebody says to me, it's like, we want to help, what can we do? That's where I jump in and say, just give me a couple of hours of your time. That's all we ask.
You mentioned something about the teams and insurance and so on, which is something I would have never really thought of. Something I do think of, and I guess part because I'm a collector, you have these players in, former and current, and, you have, first of all, there's two things. A, you have all these merchandising deals, and they've turned into like these 360 appearance deals. Fanatics and Steiner are the first two companies that come to mind. And then the fact that a lot of these charities now have become for-profit in a sense. You see a lot of these, or non-profits rather, like hospitals and so on and so forth, are actually advertising and getting into the for-profit game. How do you navigate kind of both of those worlds to still continue to do all this good work?
It's about picking the charities. And that's because you're right. I have a list of charities that I won't deal with for those particular reasons. So, and the thing is, too, that people come to me all the time with different causes. And to give you an example, when Sandy happened, we wanted to help. But rather than deal with the bigger charities, we picked five local charities in five of the hardest hit areas, and the money went directly to them. I mean, to the point where I got into my truck and I drove out and I literally handed the check to somebody who then turned around. George Steinbrenner once said, that if more than two people know that you did something good, you did it for the wrong reasons. And I've never said out to, well, I did this or I did that, but it's more a matter of when something happens, like, okay, what can I do? That's how I get by the charities, is that I am very specific in the charities that I pick. The other part of it, normally what I'll do, whenever an athlete comes to me and said, hey, I want to do this and I want to do that, the first thing I will do is I will say, who's your agent? And I will say, if you don't mind, as a courtesy, I'm going to call your agent, Ralph, and I'm going to say, Ralph, just to let you know, Joe B. has agreed to do this. I just wanted to make you aware of it. All the money's going to charity. Everything's above board. We're providing security. I just want to let you know. And in most cases, that's how we, I won't say circumnavigate, because that's not fair, but that's basically how we get around
the
politics of it. I mean, it's sad that it's come to that,
Yeah.
But, and on both fronts, I mean, as you said, you're a collector. I'm a collector. Anytime you've ever gone to whether it be spring training or when you could have access to a baseball and you see the same guys there, I wanted someone to be able to give me a shirt that said, hey, I'm not going to sell your baseball.
Right.
And that's why whenever someone said, where do you want to sign it? I said, you're signing the baseball for me, you sign it whatever you want.
Right.
And you put whatever you want on it, and believe me, I've seen it. I've gotten baseballs back from clubbies where it was signed in the clubhouse for me, with the signature smudged, so that you can't sell it,
right.
Or Tiger's renowned for when he signs pictures, he'll only sign them in the corner, so literally you can't frame it because the frame will cover the signature.
Wow.
Or I don't know if you're a big golf guy, but if you go to, a golf tournament or whatever,
mm-hmm.
the golfers all now carry Sharpies. but they carry weird colored Sharpies. I mean, to be honest with you, I don't have an issue with it. I don't really have an issue with it because I'm not going to sell anything. You're doing me the honor of signing it. So you know what? You want to sign it backwards?
Right.
You want to sign it upside down?
Sean Clancy, the owner of Foley's here on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. I'm Ralph Iaversa. The last published count I saw was 3,500. What are we up to right now as far as, and when you walk in immediately to your left and then as you continue to go through the bar, it is just wall after wall of signed baseballs, not just baseball players, too, a number of different public figures. How many baseballs are we up to right now? Do you know?
Just south of 3,900.
Oh, wow.
I have to admit, I'm probably gotten to be a little bit more selective now about baseballs. I tend to be a little bit more choosy, although I have to say, now I'm not going to say that my collection is complete, although I did promise my girlfriend, who I may have mentioned is Chrissy Ackert, who is a beat writer and covers the Yankees, so I get lots of baseball. I talk baseball all day and then I go home and we talk more baseball. But I got asked for many years what I thought to be what was the holy grail of baseballs. What's the one baseball that's going to make your collection complete? Well, I actually got mine about 2 weeks ago. And this might actually be somewhat of a scoop because while it's on display, it hasn't been properly publicized just yet. But I have a baseball signed by Pope John Paul II.
Wow.
Now, he's actually a saint.
He's canonized,
yes. So that basically means that I have one baseball signed by an actual saint and 3,899 baseballs signed by sinners. The newest baseball that I got, I haven't actually physically got it, but it is mine and will be in my possession very soon, is a game ball from last night's no-hitter by Mike Fiers of the Oakland A's. I also recently got a baseball from C.C. Sabathia's 3,000 strikeout game.
Ah, beautiful.
Yeah, so the Pope ball was very special. I mean, it was kind of emotional, and which is kind of ironic because there are three things that we do not talk about at Foley's. That's religion, politics, and the weather. People ask me, why the weather? And I'm like, if you have nothing better to do than talk about the weather, do me a favor, exit stage left.
Can you divulge how you got the ball from Pope John Paul II or no?
It's kind of a long story, but basically what happened was a good friend of mine who was a scout, he had done some work for the Italian Baseball Federation, and he had gotten a chance to do some different things while he was there. And, you know, they asked him, you know, what can we do for you? What can we do for you? And he got an opportunity to visit the graves of two of his aunts who had been nuns. When he went back the second or third time, they said, what can we do for you? What can we do for you? And, you know, better to be hung for a sheep as a lamb. He said, can I meet the Pope? Well, in this, you know, you never know who knows who. It turned out that the guy who was head of the Baseball Federation of Italy's son was the Pope's press secretary. So this guy got to meet the Pope, and he got four baseballs signed by the Pope, and he got four baseballs signed by the next Pope, Pope Benedict. You know, and I said to him, like, this has to be 10 years ago, I would say. Uh-huh. And I said to him, I said, I would love to buy one of those baseballs. He's like, he said, no, I could never sell it. And then he passed away. And he would torture me. Like one time he sent me a picture of the ball. And then he passed away. And his family had told me that one of his last things he told them was that I was to get the Pope ball. So it was very special because, and again, we don't talk religion here, but, John Paul II, and I don't get into the politics of what he did or what he didn't do or what happened on his watch or what didn't happen on his watch or whether he liked women or if he covered for other priests or whatever, but I was an 8-year-old boy in Ireland when he became Pope. And I mean, deeply religious country, but I mean, the Pope doesn't mean anything. I mean, to me, he was just some old guy in Rome that only spoke Italian, but all of a sudden along comes this guy who's a little bit younger, a little bit hipper, and he came to Ireland. And I went to, he said mass in front of 1.3 million people. Now, that might not, 1.3 million people. At the time, there were 4 million people in the country. You know, so that's a pretty decent chunk. You know, and then he made a very impassioned speech where he started the speech off by saying, "Young people of Ireland, I love you." And I'm like, "Wow, he's talking to me." So I've always had like that kind of. So he's always held a special place. Truthfully, a little still in shock, and I find it hard to believe. And I look over in that case, and I see, because it's in the case right there. It's got, and there's nothing else in the case. There's the Pope ball, a papal medal, a plaque that was given to my friend, the scout. And that's it. And a papal blessing.
He said mass at renovated Yankee Stadium.
Just to give you a funny anecdote to that. So when Benedict came, he said mass in two stadiums. He said mass at Yankee Stadium, and he said mass at Nats Park. The new and the Nats Park hadn't actually technically opened. They hadn't played a game yet, but it was officially finished.
Right.
And so this story came. This story comes through a buddy of mine that at the time worked for the Nats. So the Pope's people came to check it out. And normally what they tend to do, because there are strict rules and regulations about where the Pope can rest and where the Pope, and what tends to work out really well, why baseball stadiums tend to work out really well, is the manager's office is like right there, and the manager's office has everything that they possibly need, and it's normally pretty close to the field. So they did a tour, and they did a site inspection in Washington, and they said, "Hey," I said, "everything's fine." I said, "but you have to change the toilet." They're like, "What do you mean we have to change the toilet?" He said, "Well, you put a new toilet in." He's like, "No." He's like, "This stadium hasn't opened. Nobody's ever sat on that toilet. We are not changing the toilet." And they were adamant about it. They said, "Look, we're not changing the toilet." That's you know. So they had to bring in three distinct groups of people. One group of people had to come in and clean the toilet. A second group had to come in and sanitize the toilet. And the third group of people came in to bless the toilet. Now, they were flown in. It's not like come up the street.
Right.
So I heard about this. And so I reached out to somebody that I knew at the Nationals, and I said, "Look," I said, I am willing to donate $5,000 to the charity of your choice if I can have that toilet." I said, "I'm perfect." I said, "I'm going to put it up here." I said, "I'll have the papal pooper."
We're wrapping up with Sean Clancy, the owner of Foley's, here on the Pinstripe Plains podcast. You mentioned something earlier that I should have mentioned in my intro, because I mention it to every single new person that I bring to Foley's after I walk in, which is, this is the home of the Irish American Baseball Hall of Fame. How did this start?
Well, first and foremost, you're talking to the president of the Irish American Baseball Hall of Fame. And why am I the president of the Irish American Baseball Hall of Fame? Because I made myself the president.
Right. And nobody, you started it.
Nobody has ever questioned me on it. I mean, I go to dinners and they say, here's Sean Clancy, president of the Irish American Baseball Hall of Fame. And I stand up and I wave. And I mean, I've been on daises for this. And I was like, truthfully, how it all got started was at the very start. And I do preface this by saying we're about to enter our 11th or 12th year this year. But when it all started, it was kind of a way of, I won't say a publicity stunt, but it was kind of a way of just like, let's have a bit of fun with this. But what I realized very quickly was first year when I saw how special people took this, that we couldn't take this lightly. But what we wanted to celebrate was the contribution of the Irish in baseball. And like, if you ever go to Cooperstown and you go through, you know, the cathedral, as I call it, the room with all the plaques, and you read all the plaques and you see all the guys that are there, that, you know, from when baseball started, and they're all Irish names. You've got Leonards, you've got Duffys, you've got Walshes, you know, Galvins, and it's all Irish. You know, and then I was like, you know, so then it was like, you know what? So they're the guys that have been, they're the big guys, let's say. You know, and then I'm thinking, you know, there's so many people in baseball, so many Irish people in baseball, good guys, you know, that are under the radar. And it was my way of honoring them. And again, back to the same thing, not just about players. Now, yes, we have put a couple of players in, but, you know, and we have kind of noticed, or we have kind of honored, like, some of the bigger Irish, you know, guys like Nolan Ryan, you know. But it was like, I'm like, you know what, this is not just going to be about players. So every year what we try to do is we try to extend the tentacles of the group. And we've inducted executives, front office people, back office people. I mean, we've got scouts, we've got clubbies, we've got groundskeepers, you know, executives, obviously we have players, physios, coaches, high school coaches, and it's kind of like it's a more lasting than what we do with the stuffed burger, but it's a chance for a week or whatever it might be to shine the spotlight on the little guy and say, you know what, Ralphie, you're doing a good job. Well, though with your last name, I'm not sure how much Irish you have there, but I'm
not,
like,
not much.
It's like, listen, it's like I want to honor you. I want to honor what you've done. And that's how it's, and to be honest, that's how it started. It's a lot of fun, and it's amazing too, the amount of people who will stop me, and it's like, you know, like the most bizarre people, like Mickey Rivers once into the Irish American Baseball Hall of Fame. And I was like,
how much Irish has he got?
Mickey has a way of justifying how he's Irish, and I'm like, Mickey, there's no way in the world, if I put that on a plaque, I'm getting closed up, you know.
Good old Mickey Quick.
And again, that's what it is. It's just, I mean, it's about honoring the, you know, that's the thing about baseball is, you know, baseball isn't just, you know, the 25 guys in uniform.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of unsung heroes, you know, clubbies that work till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, or, you know, the you know, physios or the PR guys that are there, you know, morning, night, and then you, it's when you get to the minors, minor leagues, or, you know, forget about it. You have broadcasters who'll tell you that, you know, they've had to switch over to, you know, like basically to something that was pre-recorded so they can go down and pull the tarp. And, you know, it's just about, it's back to the same thing. It's just about being able to make the little people feel like, hey, you know what, we're respected, we're acknowledged, and it's pretty cool.
Sean Clancy, the owner of Foley's, been around for 15 years, 33rd between 5th and 6th at Foley's NY on social media. Sean, thank you for being so generous with your time, and thanks for having a great place for us to come and watch the games.
You're very welcome, and I welcome any of your listeners to come. Don't be afraid to say hello. I'm the big, tall guy with the scary face and the glasses.
And that is a wrap on episode number 23 of the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. A big thank you again to Sean and the whole team at Foley's for being great hosts always, including when I go there to tape a podcast, and especially when my equipment's not working, but thankfully my BlackBerry did. Thank you for tuning in, for rating, reviewing, and subscribing. We'll catch you here next week on the Pinstripe Lanes podcast. Let's go, Yankees.